This is an ABC podcast.
Hi, I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and this is The Signal. Feeding pets in Australia is a $4 billion business. But who's keeping an eye on it?
I think the surprising thing for all of us was that there isn't any form of regulation, particularly in relation to the recall system, which is amazingly woeful.
Right, so that lack of oversight has had some pretty devastating consequences.
And I just heard her gagging, and she was very distressed. She didn't even drink the water. She just ran outside, running around the backyard with all this white froth coming out of her mouth. And she couldn't stop.
The wild, wild west that is the pet food industry in Australia and what to do about it. That's today's episode.
Okay, so I don't have pets because I like going on long holidays. Uh-huh. And my housemate is allergic to cats and because our landlord is a bit funny about dogs. But one day, you know, when I become a real grown-up, I'm pretty keen to get one.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm living out my pet ownership dreams vicariously through my parents' two new puppies.
You are.
It's great. I'm getting enough videos sent to me that it actually does feel like I have a dog or two.
Right. So even though we're both petless, we do kind of get the pet thing. So I caught up with Mandy Swan. Now, she lives in Glebe in Sydney, and she used to have a dog, a Basset hound called Georgie.
I got her at 9 weeks old in 2005, and I got her from a lady named Trish who had just bred 1 litter of Basset hounds. Her Basset was Asset.
And what was she like as a puppy?
She was a chewy, chewy puppy.
Delightful.
Which I think most puppies are pretty chewy. She just had to sniff everything all the time and chew everything all the time.
And you've got a video of her fetching slippers. Can you tell me about this trick?
Yes. My husband always said he wanted a dog to bring him slippers. And I'll just...
So there's a particular thing he was looking for, was it?
Yes, yes. I mean, he said it half jokingly, but I think deep down there was some truth to this. And as soon as you said the word, she would go. So you'd have to be careful about saying the word. You have to really mean it.
So you sort of said slippers in conversation, she would run off.
Yes, she'd immediately try to go find them. And she could find them in a variety of places and just sometimes randomly just bring them looking for a treat. She would get a really nice treat if she did it. But I think in this video though, I think she only gets a carrot.
What a bloody good girl.
Such a good girl. And look, Mandy sent me a bunch of pictures of Georgie too. And let me tell you, they are super cute. She was this kind of lolloping, droopy-eyed thing with this big wet nose and kind of long flappy ears.
Oh, you said was, which makes me think that there's, you know, an imminent twist in this tale. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, so actually what happened is still a bit of a mystery. So Mandy reckons in January of last year, quite suddenly, Georgie just got really sick.
It was the day before Australia Day. And I just heard her gagging and she was very distressed. And I went out and I walked down the stairs with her. I was going to try to give her some water. And she just started, she didn't even drink the water. She just ran outside, running around the backyard with all this white froth coming out of her mouth. And she couldn't stop. She was in terrible distress. So I just got dressed quickly. We had this ramp that we led her up to into the back of the car. And I drove her to not our normal vet, but Sydney University vet.
Yeah.
And I saw a vet there. They saw her quite quickly and they wanted to keep her to give her some sort of more stronger pain medication and get her calmer and then to try to investigate.
Okay, so Mandy left Georgie at the vet hospital overnight where they gave her more painkillers, but it didn't really fix whatever was going wrong. And so at about 3 a.m. on Australia Day last year, the vet phoned Mandy back with some options and a couple of theories about what was happening to her.
They thought she might have this thing called megaesophagus, and he explained that the esophagus muscles had weakened and she couldn't swallow properly. But they weren't ruling out other possibilities as well, that she might have something on top of that. So they're still investigating. And so we were into Australia Day by that point, and they were keeping her there. And I called them and they said, well, she's stabilised, she seems to be settling in, we're going to do an ultrasound the next day and some more tests. So I wanted to go see her, but they thought that I might quite distress her because, you know, I wouldn't be able to stay with her. And so I decided not to. which I now regret, because the next day they called me and said, look, she had developed pneumonia, and they couldn't, the tests were, you know, unclear. They couldn't really find a cause for this megasophagus. And regardless, she had developed this very, very strong pneumonia that they couldn't manage. She was in a lot of distress. And so I said, well, look, we have to stop this pain. And so they brought her out. I wanted her to come out to me in the light and on some grass. They had some grass, and they, you know, I sat with her for a little while, but I could see, you know, she was just in so much pain and distress. Like, they'd given her some pain medication, but she was obviously suffering, and I didn't really feel like she even knew I was there. And then they, you know, they stopped her consciousness and they stopped her heart. And then I helped them carry her to the car. And we brought her home, and the girls said goodbye, and my husband and I drove to this property his dad has, and we buried her. We dug her grave. We covered her over, and yeah, that's what we ended up doing, and so that's where she is.
So that condition the vets mentioned to Mandy, megasophagus, it used to be pretty rare, but this year and last year in Australia, there have been dozens of cases popping up in dogs.
Right, and it's an incurable condition. It causes dogs' esophaguses to swell, which can prevent them from swallowing or absorbing food. But look, it doesn't necessarily have to be fatal. So there are whole corners of the internet full of videos of people trying to teach their dogs with megasophagus how to eat. Sitting up in a high chair.
Yeah, right.
So the dog doesn't choke on its food. Like this video that was sent to the 7:30 program a few months ago of the owners of a golden retriever called Holly, who are trying to teach her how to eat sitting upright.
Good girl, Holly. Good girl, darling. Good sit. Good sit, Baba. Maybe put a pillow around her legs so that she has to stay in that position.
We'll just put a thing out.
Good sit, Hol.
Good girl.
Look at her. We're all here. Good girl. You're a good girl.
So this issue with megasophagus first came to, I guess, official attention, you could say, in Australia back in March, when about 10 police dogs in Victoria contracted it, and one actually had to be put down. And around the same time, two dogs working for the prison service in South Australia presented with the same condition.
Right, and a common link seems to be a pet food called Advanced Dermacare.
Which sounds like one of the fancy ones, right?
Well, yeah, and all of the dogs seem to be eating this food, and it's also the product that Mandy used to use to feed Georgie.
Right.
And Advanced Dermacare is made by, get this, Mars Confectionery, like the Mars Bar people, which is a big pet food company. It makes all sorts of, you know, pretty well-known pet food brands.
You're right. And now Advanced Dermacare was recalled earlier this year, and the company hasn't officially said the recall was because of the megasophagus cases, but rather that it was a precaution. And a team at Melbourne Uni is looking into whether there's a link, but they haven't wrapped up their inquiry just yet.
Sure, but the really remarkable thing about this situation isn't that the recall happened, it's that it didn't actually have to. And that's because in Australia, there's no law saying that pet food companies have to do anything, like recall anything. And there's no vetting of whether pet foods are safe in the first place.
Which seems remarkable to me.
Mm.
So to get a sense of how that works, we tracked down Patrick Verray. He's from the consumer advocacy organisation Choice.
There's no independent regulator, so it's left to the pet food companies themselves to decide how they're performing and whether they want to call recalls.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do the pet food companies say they're going?
They say they're going very well, actually.
That's
they
what
say,
a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. It's no surprise at all, actually. Yeah, yeah.
And have there been recalls by, like, voluntary recalls?
The interesting thing is it's really hard to tell how many recalls there have been because it's all decided by the companies themselves. In the last 7 years at Choice, we think there's been 4 recalls, but there could be more. And it's often the case that with some dodgy pet foods, they just remove it from the shelves without recalling it.
Right.
Yeah.
And do they tell customers?
No. In some situations, they don't. They just remove it silently and that's that.
And, I mean, that feels a little laissez-faire. I mean, how has that situation evolved without much oversight?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I met this Choice supporter who contacted Choice, and she was talking about how her cat got really sick from eating dodgy cat food, which she thought was premium cat food. Mm-hmm. And it took many months for the product to be recalled when she first reported the issue.
Yeah, and the vet was clear that the reason the cat was sick was the
vet
diet.
Was actually unclear. Okay. Some of these cases are rather difficult.
Yeah.
But the issue was the company knew about it and took many months to recall the product, and that was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. That was back in 2008, and now in 2018, she was really angry when she chatted to me. She was really concerned that in a decade, nothing has changed.
So like Patrick said, nothing has changed in the last 10 years, but it might be about to.
Can I get you just to count to five, and I'll just check your levels as you do that.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's great.
Well, there you go. I'll pass infant school.
Always good when a senator can count. That's
okay.
Great.
So that's Senator Sterling Griff, who represents South Australia in the Senate as part of the Centre Alliance, which used to be Nick Xenophon's party. And he set up a Senate inquiry into pet food in Australia, sparked by the Megasophagus cases. And it's been ticking along since June.
Right. And the committee that he's on is meant to hand its recommendations about what the government should be doing to the government sometime today.
We got the inquiry up due to a large number of dog deaths that were reported and other reported pet issues in recent times. And it was obvious that something wasn't right and worth the Senate having a good look at the industry. And what we found was a $4 billion unregulated industry that mostly sets its own standards and looks after its own compliance and recalls. So a massive industry with massive turnover and impact and surprisingly very little regulation.
What regulation is there, if any, at the moment?
Well, there isn't. Individual states do have some form of regulation in relation to the processing of animal carcasses, for instance, that are used in pet food. But there is absolutely no other form of regulation whatsoever with the industry, which is pretty incredible when you consider that, you know, there are more than 24 million pets in Australia, almost 10 million dogs and cats. And for dogs and cats alone, they consume a whopping 30 million can and dry meals a week. And you know, all from a $4 billion unregulated industry that sets its own standards, which is kind of hardly a model for transparency. It's really like the old Dracula in charge of the blood bank problem.
And if you look at the ingredients of your standard supermarket variety pet food, I mean, what goes into some of these products, and if there's no quality control at all, what assurance can pet owners have that what they're buying isn't going to potentially, you know, kill their dog or cat?
Look, because of the volume that I've just mentioned, I mean, look, the industry in the main does very well. When you consider that kind of volume, there aren't a lot of major issues as a result of it. But I think the surprising thing for all of us was that there isn't any form of regulation, particularly in relation to the recall system, which is amazingly woeful.
So what are they doing about it?
Well, at the end of the day, it's obviously up to the government, which reckons it wants to see the details of the report first. But one thing would seem to suggest that there is about to be a bit of a shake-up here, and it's that Sterling Griff reckons even the pet food industry itself thinks a bit more oversight is probably a good move.
Look, I think the government will respond to this quite positively, because the Pet Food Working Group, which they've had operating on and off for some time now, is very keen on this inquiry's report to feed into the actions that they want to take. So I think the government will be very responsive to it. What's needed? Well, what's needed really when you have a look at all the submissions that we received and people that spoke during the hearings is absolutely greater accountability. We need to ensure there are enforceable standards for food safety and there is a framework for implementing mandatory recalls. And there needs to be repercussions for manufacturers who fail to notify their industry body or the public of potential hazards in a reasonable time. Now, in the instance of Advanced Dermacare, which was the product that was implicated, many months ago, it was 4 months from the issue being reported before a public recall was issued. Now, an earlier time frame would certainly have saved many of the well over 100 dogs that were impacted. You can't play with anything like this because it has a very dramatic impact on pets and their owners.
Right, so probably a change on the way, so watch out for that. And he's definitely right about that last bit.
You know, pets have a very important place in our lives, and you know, Georgie was my friend, and I'm sure that's the case for, you know, most people who, you know, choose to have pets. And I think, you know, most people really try to do the best thing they can by their pets. And I think also that the sort of the messages that are being sort of sent out by various brands, you know, are that these foods are being tested. And, you know, obviously I would like to hope that that is the case. And when you sort of really start looking into it, you see that actually it is quite unregulated and it is very self-regulated, and that really is a recipe for disaster.
So what are you supposed to feed your dogs in the meantime?
Carrots, I guess. Or if you're my parents, toast and tea in bed every morning. That's it for The Signal today. Thank you so much for listening. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do subscribe, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye.